That Chris is Swedish DJ Avicii, who has been well known for a number of years now, one of the top DJs in the world, recently died at 28. I'm Timory Millington, that's Chris Mueller, and you are listening to Trending.
Yeah, sad story. I mean, from all intents and purposes, it looked like this guy was pulling his life together. He had stopped touring. He had said, I need to get my health together. And he'd suffered some major repercussions from a party lifestyle. I mean, he had pancreatitis. He had things go wrong. And it looked like he was pulling out to say, no, I need to get my health together. I need to keep myself in good shape. I need to kind of pull away from the party lifestyle. What a great example to people who may be in it to have one of the top DJs in the world say, like, if I keep living like this, it'll kill me.
Right.
And then to see that he passed away is just, yeah, really sad.
Well, a lot of his health issues were attributed to his drinking lifestyle that he had been living in for so long. And it's just so heartbreaking because this comes within the same week as a Mini-Me, right? From Austin Powers has also died, and relatively young as well, in his 40s. And this guy, they're saying is suicide, versus with the Swedish DJ Avicii, they're saying it's not suicide, doesn't look like there's any foul play, but nothing's clear. Either way, this man's really young to have died.
Yeah, Vern, gosh, you know, it's funny. So I grew up in the 90s. I'm 40-something, right? And so the Austin Powers films were definitely there as I was coming of age. And
this is no endorsement of Austin Powers.
No, it is not. It absolutely not. But the Mini-Me character, this actor, and obviously he was a little person, right? He had dwarfism, but to so embrace who you are, to be able to get up in front of millions and millions of people and just have fun, you know, being on camera like that. And really, I to bring joy to a lot of people through the work he did, I think that really hit me. It was a sad, sad loss to see that he had passed, and to hear that, you know, the family didn't come out and say it's depression or suicide, but they did allude to it. They said depression and suicide are very serious issues. You never know what kind of battle someone's going through inside. Be kind to one another. And always know it's never too late to reach out to someone for help.
Well, and we look at this, and the statement, again, is pointing toward that idea of suicide, which is just heartbreaking when we're seeing an example of this just across the country right now for young people. And it's something that young people are almost idolizing. You know, we talked a lot last year about that one show, 13 Reasons, and how, you know, it glorifies suicide. And there are some serious issues with that, especially when we see that young people have, unfortunately, a lot of their role models or people that they're following on a daily basis online. They're unfortunately following this path as well. And I think young people see this example of, you know, two worlds, one of despair, but one of, well, let's just make life easier by ending it. And both ideologies are detrimental to the human person.
Yeah, absolutely. I go back to scripture and Christ saying, in this life, you will have troubles. And I don't know that we prepare ourselves for that. You know, everybody gets their achievement prize. We praise achievement, but we don't necessarily praise the struggle. And everybody has struggle. Every life has struggle. Every life will have challenges. And no matter whether you are a fully committed Christian or you are living a life of total debauchery, struggle is going to come into your life. It's just whether or not you can choose to use that to glorify Christ. You know, I look at raising my kids and, you know, hard times come, you know, when you're 13, like a hard time comes in and it's, as an adult, you look at it and you go, that's ridiculous. But for a 13-year-old, it's real. And then so to teach them that this moment is just a snap. It's just a blink. It won't last forever. This depression you're in, it's not going to go on forever. This struggle because you got, you know, bad grades or this taken away or girlfriend dumped you or whatever that is, it's not going to be forever. It's just a moment. You know, that really, truly what Christ says, in this life you will have troubles, but take heart, I've overcome the world. That we're called to live in that knowledge that God overcomes all this struggle, has overcome, has achieved the victory, and that even though the circumstances of my life may not reflect that at this moment, I can choose to cling to his victory, knowing that I will be in that victory with him and can live in that victory, even in this moment of defeat.
When you look at what the church has to say at the same time on the topic of suicide, and I think it's both consoling and at the same time confrontational with the issue. You know, we had a really tragic suicide in our family within the past 10 years. It was just absolutely heart-wrenching. And I remember, you know, I sat there opening up that Catechism of the Catholic Church up going, where can I receive some consolation in this moment? And, you know, one of the first things the Catechism talks about is how we are stewards of a life that has been given to us. And so we have a responsibility for what we do with that. And, you know, we are answerable before God for how we live our life. And while, you know, God is not completely bound by the sacraments, we were reminded of that when we talk about, you know, the church and whether or not someone's Protestant or Catholic. He has ways of extending mercy and the opportunity for repentance that we can't fully understand, especially given the fact in the situation of a suicide, sometimes a person is not as responsible, sometimes given the mental state that they're in.
Right.
And, you know, looking both at Avicii as well as the other actor, Vern, right, from the mini-me, right, from Austin Powers, what we see is both of them struggled with depression. They had this party lifestyle. They were two people who were incredibly successful, yet at the same time, they weren't happy at times.
Right. We talked about this a little bit last week when we talked about music and musicians and where are you finding your affirmation. But if you need that constant drug of people's approval as an actor or a performer, as an artist or as an executive or whatever it is, you need that achievement to feel like you have worth. When you step out of the limelight or when you step away from the workplace, it's really easy to feel empty. And in that emptiness, if you've never sat with and just accepted that who I am has value, who I am is inherently beautiful in God's eyes, that God chooses me. Like, you know, we had the Good Shepherd, right? And I know my sheep. Like God chose you knowing what a screw up you are, right? Like he knows every of my dark, deepest secrets. And he says, I choose you, right? I choose you knowing all that I choose you. Then there's nothing that I can do that can take away that beauty, that inherent value that I have. I think it has to be said, you know, that if you're listening to this, you're struggling with depression, you've got, that's going on in your life where you're facing these struggles, talk to somebody. You know, and if you feel like, oh, I don't want to burden them, this has been going on, you know, that's fine. As a friend, as a father, as a brother, burden me.
Right.
You know, if you're a person in my life and you're struggling with depression, burden me. You know, and I've had that conversation with friends where I've said, you know, I was talking to a friend last year and he said, yeah, we haven't talked in a while. So like I kind of disappeared. I was depressed. I was going through this thing. And if that happens, if I disappear, I need you to come find me. You know, if I get into a dark place, I want friends who are going to say, no, I, what's going on? Let's talk. Let's work through it.
Right.
You know,
and those, there are two coins there. That's us being willing and able to have those conversations because, you know, I've had family members, you know, our family member who did commit suicide. I remember at one point him calling about 6 months before and it would happen every now and again. And you'd just be sitting there on the phone and you knew that they were in a challenging place. And maybe what they were having to say was difficult to hear or even just a difficult state of being, you know, maybe they're on something at the moment when you're talking to them. But sometimes they just need to know someone loves them and they're clinging on to that bit of hope for a moment. And it is so important, I think, for us to remember that sometimes we are the only intermediary between them and something that's going to happen. And not that we can take that responsibility and blame ourselves in any way, but that we're willing to be present when people need us to be present. And then also willing to push them to be on their own two feet. Because I feel like some people, you know, with depression, we get into this mode of being dependent. Well, you need to help satisfy me because I'm not okay. But in reality, you know, we're adults and we have a responsibility for our actions and a responsibility to get out of whatever funk we may be struggling with.
Yeah, I, you know, it's, and there's always that balance between creating a codependency and actually supporting someone, you know, and, you know, I would say in our social media context where we all know each other, but we don't know each other, where everybody shares their beautiful pictures that they've retouched on Instagram or whatever, and that I think we've veered too far the other way. You know, I don't know that we're a codependent society as much as we're all just eating the, you know, the junk food of social media and never really engaging in real relationship. And so you might have a friend on social media who you see on a regular basis and you think their life is going great because they've gotten so good at projecting what it looks like to have the life like everybody else has. But inside they're dealing with all these struggles and doubts. I think, you know, like I got together with a men's group on Saturday and we sat down, we had breakfast and it's just a heart-to-heart sharing, right? Those contexts are where we need to nudge each other and dig past that, all the facade, like, how are you doing? Oh, I'm great. Okay, why? What's going on? And really to get into the, why are you great? What's going on in your life? And then you start, well, actually, no, I was just kind of giving you sunshine, like not really great right now. Like there's some struggle going on, here's what it is. And then to lean in and pray with each other. You know, it's that classic thing. I think the hardest part of dealing with a friend or a family member in depression is we want to fix it. It seems so obvious to us and they can't see it. And so I think, yeah, sometimes allowing people just to talk through And just to listen and not try to fix the problem enables them to walk and to talk themselves to a point where they understand what the next step is.
Well, and isn't that the opposite of the show 13 Reasons? It was kind of a big middle finger to people going, hey, you're the reason I did what I did. And again, there's that codependency that all of a sudden they're trying to say, well, suicide's really everyone else's fault and never. And not that you're sitting here placing blame, but yeah, we're responsible for our actions that we act upon. And that's what, you know, the catechism is so clear. Yes, things can lessen how responsible we are, but we're stewards of a life given to us. Just like, you know, at the same time, here we are. Remember last year we talked about tax returns, right? So everyone's getting their tax return. We're a steward of the things we've been given as well, right? So what are you doing with your tax return? How are you looking at the money that you have coming in and how you are giving it to the poor, saving for the future, investing in your family, and not just in material things, but rather a lifestyle that promotes virtue?
Yeah, yeah, totally. You know, it's funny. Luke Maxwell is a friend, and he has a great ministry, You Cannot Be Erased, and he dealt with clinical depression. And, you know, there's a difference between I'm in a funk and I'm clinically depressed. You know, there's a difference between I had a bad day and I've got a chemical imbalance going on in my brain that needs treatment. But yeah, you're right. At some point, every person has to say, I need help. It's the same thing, you know, it's the same thing with addiction. At some point, you have to get to the point where you say, I can't do this by myself anymore. And that's, you know, when a friend can say, okay, I'll walk with you.
You're listening to Trending. That is Chris Mueller. I am Timory Millington. During this break, why don't you give us a shout out on social media? You can find Chris at C Mueller Tweets. That's M-U-E-L-L-E-R. And you can find me at Timory, T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. We would love to hear your thoughts. Coming up on the show in just a bit, we have a new segment coming in, a little bit of relationship advice that was written into us, as well as more about what's happening in California and gender ideology. We'll be right back. So this week, California has just been full of surprises, one of which is California bill now is in the California legislature. And basically, it's a bill that would outlaw any attempt to help people with gender dysphoria and to accept their biological gender. This is a huge crisis taking place. We must do everything in our power to confront this. This is Trending. I'm Timory Millington, and that's Chris Mueller.
It's harder and harder to live in California with a good conscience.
Oh, they just wait. There's more coming, California.
I know, man. Sometimes I wonder, and again, I live in California. I've lived here my whole life. I love my home. But sometimes I feel like, man, at what point are you a prophet in trying to speak into this culture? And what point are you supposed to be Lot and just run because, you know, the fire is going to fall?
Assembly Bill 2943 would make it illegal to help anyone struggling with same-sex attraction or gender dysphoria. You guys, this is something that is in the works. It is not law. I've been looking into a lot of what's been taking place with some of the laws surrounding gender in the state of California and between sex education and even infringements on free speech. And this is essentially what it is.
No, it's absolutely infringement on free speech.
Yeah, this is what it's coming to. We've got to speak up and we have a lot of opportunities. So I'm going to throw this out here. I consolidated how we can get involved. There are 5 steps you can take to speak up against this law. California has really worked to essentially degrade any strong ideas of human sexuality. And so what we need to do here is to take a stand. So at my website, timory.com, there are 5 steps that you can walk through, some of which are from the California Family Conference. You know, calling. It takes just a minute, Chris, to pick up the phone and call. But people, I think, get nervous. All you have to do is you call your assembly member. It's not even the assembly member that you ever get on the phone.
You're going to get a college intern.
A college intern or, you know, the chief of staff, someone working in there that you end up interacting with. And in fact, it's the chief of staff and the interns that are handing them their briefs on these bills to help them know how to vote. These assemblymen, these senators do not always read them themselves. They're being briefed on a packet.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Oftentimes these bills are written by lobbyist groups. They're not written by the legislator. They're written by lobbyist groups. Then they're presented to chiefs of staff or interns or whoever. And then they tell the congressperson or the senate person what to expect and how this is going to be received and why we need to do it. And if it fits within their ideological framework, then it moves forward. And in California, the ideological framework is insane.
Yes.
Sorry.
Well, this isn't the only thing, Chris, that we're seeing right now. This last week, actually on Monday, the 23rd, we saw sit-outs across the world. You had people in Australia, the UK, and the United States sitting out because they're sick and tired of sexual education that essentially is forcing gender ideology and pro-abortion and contraceptive education down these children's throats to a point that's quite scandalous, to be quite frank.
No, absolutely. I mean, you know, I was reading some of the stuff that's coming out again and, you know, being put out there and talking about different devices that people can use for sexual gratification and then saying, but if you don't have one of those, there's always, you know, produce in, you know, as long as you're using the right safe coverage for it. I'm really trying to be delicate here.
It is vile, you guys.
Sweet mercy.
This is what's happening in Orange County. Orange County has basically come out and said that you can't pull your kids from sex ed classes, which is totally false. So here's what's happening. In the end of March, essentially, a memo came out saying from the Orange County Board of Education saying that you can no longer opt out from education for your kids when it comes to sex education. But in fact, back in 2015, a California Healthy Youth Act actually very explicitly says you can protect your kids. You have the right to excuse your children from participating in these classes. And you as parents basically have the right to educate your children on human sexuality as you see fit. And might I add, as you see fit, that's consistent with your moral, religious upbringing and views.
Right. And so what's going to happen is the majority of parents are just going to go along, right? Because we're all just, there's nothing we can do. It's the government. And we forget that the government is of the people for the people. Like we forget that, right? We have a say in this. We don't know our legal rights. And so the majority of people just go through with it. You know what? And what the school district says here is that we encourage people to advise their children that they disagree with such lessons. That's not your right. Your right is to say, no, don't teach my kids this, right? I can say you don't teach kids that, right?
Absolutely. I think that as parents are being really clear that they're going to pull their kids out of courses if they're going to continue to promote sex education. But when you have these things that are scare tactics for parents, what it is at the same time is if you actually don't send your kid to school and it's not an excused absence, they lose funding. So the funding, not only for the sex education programs, but for the school in general, they're losing funding for the school. And so parents, you know, I've just got to say, you know, Jordan Peterson actually did an interview up in Canada not too long ago. And he, you know, works a lot with areas of psychology and studying the brain and how we interact. And he was looking at this and saying, you know, I think that, you know, parents need to be willing to take the repercussions of pulling their kids out of quote-unquote comprehensive sex education programs that are promoting this false sense of human sexuality. I mean, to the point, Chris, they're sitting here promoting lubricants. They're sitting here teaching the kids how to use contraceptives.
Right.
I just can't understand this.
You know, I try to teach this to parents all the time when I go out to speak or at our parish. Your goal is not to get your kid into the best college. Your goal as a parent is to establish a relationship with Jesus Christ that will carry your kids lifelong into heaven. You're supposed to be stewards of God's children in your home. And so often we go, oh no, we can't pull them out because then they'll miss this test or they tied this grade to that or they get extra credit if they're going to be there. And you know, as a parent, we just have to say none of that matters. Like none of that matters more than the salvation of my child. None of that matters more than leading them to a relationship with Christ that will lead them to heaven and eternity. And we just have to stop and say no more. You know, another tact that a lot of people are doing is they're moving their kids into charter school programs, and the charter schools have exercised a little bit more. They still have to teach these programs, but they do so in a way that a lot of times doesn't, they inform the parents more. The parents have more knowledge of what's going on. They don't try to slip as much by.
And they have a deeper sense of involvement there, not just with what's being covered, but how they're teaching, what they're teaching specifically. I think, Chris, parents need to take charge. I think they're afraid when it comes to education that their kid's going to be singled out.
Well, it's not just education. We've abdicated our role across the board. You know, kids go to school from, 7:30 until 3 in the afternoon, and then they're home for maybe an hour and a half, and they'll go to the club sports, and then they do that until the evening, and then they go to bed. And so what time did you parent? You've essentially outsourced all of your parenting. When did you impart your values? When did you impart your faith life? When did you teach them what it means to be a man or a woman? You didn't. You paid for someone else to influence your child. And a lot of times, you have no idea what's going on in those people's lives.
Right. Well, we did a show a while back talking about parenting. And one of the things that really stood out to me was that, well, the kids might not always respond well to the rules, right? At the end of the day, they crave them and they actually want them. They need that guideline because they don't know how to survive through all of these tricky situations. And even though the rules may just really stink at times, it may not go along with what's popular or what makes me feel good at the moment. Kids respect and want the rules at the end of the day. And even when you're talking and it seems like they're not listening, they actually are listening.
Well, and it's, you know, I think the insidious thing too is you look at child development and you look at a kindergartner, a first grader, a third grader, we're in like a very concrete operational stage. Because Mrs. So-and-so says that's the way it is, that's the way it is, right? And the hardest thing to do is to substitute teach a kindergarten class because they're going to tell you all day that the way it's supposed to be is the way it's supposed to be. Well, if they're giving them this gender education in these early ages in our public schools, that concrete operational mind wants to say that's the way it is because Mrs. So-and-so said it's the way it is. They get to middle school, they start challenging a little bit more, they start differentiating that a little bit more, they start rebelling. But again, the parent is there to help them navigate those waters. We're giving up all of that opportunity, all of that responsibility. And yeah, it's time that we say no more, no more.
And you guys, are we really helping these young minds when we're pushing all these different types of gender on them? How to have sex, when to do it? We're not giving them good STD education, in fact. That's something that's not covered. And I've gone head to head a number of times with Planned Parenthood employees who are all about contraception. But they're like, oh, yeah, well, I guess STDs are rising. I said, yeah. Does contraception protect you from an STD? Well, no, but at least it prevents unwanted pregnancies. Yeah, but there are people who will never be able to have wanted pregnancies. And, you know, Chris, just the gender ideology issue, just this past week, I was reading, and you sent something over as well, American Academy of Pediatrics, which we've been talking about very often on this show, because they are consistent with showing solid evidence about the issue of gender ideology. But guess what? Something they posted kind of fell in line with what Teen Vogue was saying this week about how kids who are choosing to identify as transgender, they're struggling with major mental illness.
We've had a lot of small studies. This was a large study by Kaiser, the Kaiser Foundation, and looking at teens in different states and all things. And yeah, they said just tremendously, teens who are dealing with gender dysphoria or identify opposite of their biological gender are dealing with attention deficit disorder. They're dealing with depression. They're dealing with more suicide. They're dealing with all these things. What's interesting is this study looked at them and assess this, I think, on the day that they were diagnosed, right? From the first, it wasn't like they'd been living in this alternate lifestyle for a very long time. It was from the moment it was identified, what are they kind of showing up with? Mm-hmm. And so, what it said is, yeah, if you have a student who shows up with gender dysphoria or trans or whatever, you need to then be looking very closely for all of these other things so that you can help at that point. What's interesting is the Teen Vogue article wanted to say, oh no, the reason they're dealing with these things is because of prejudice, right? So the prejudice has led to it. But again, that's not necessarily backed up by the study. Although, yeah, certainly if you're dealing with those things, you probably are going to face a certain amount of prejudice.
Well, and the perfect example of this, for example, is Jazz Jennings. She, you know, quote unquote, made her transformation at a very young age. She had a sex change at a very young age. And she's someone who most people have been led to believe for a number of years that she was a little girl when in fact she's a little boy. And she, you know, I remember watching an interview with her where she's dealing with this boy who's interested in him, right? So sorry, Jazz Jennings is biologically a boy and he identifies as a girl. Another boy was interested in Jazz Jennings. And we're going to come back to this because it's interesting how it's handled and the mom wants her child to be authentic and truthful about her biological anatomy. We'll be right back on Trending. You're listening to Trending. This is Timory Millington. That is Chris Mueller. We've been talking about Orange County, California, and the laws that we may be facing that would prevent any type of counseling for someone who's wanting to work on their gender dysphoria. We're also seeing that in the state of California, in Orange County specifically, parents are being told basically scare tactics that they can't opt their children out of sex education, when in fact a law back in 2015 says that you as a parent have a right to do that. So now we're looking at, Chris, you know, the American Academy of Pediatrics is clear on this, that young teenagers who are identifying as transgender, they're struggling with depression. And this is something that we see with Jazz Jennings, who I mentioned just a minute ago, made an early transition.
Interestingly, Jazz Jennings, the book, I Am Jazz, is part of the curriculum in Orange County.
Exactly.
Right. So you're teaching. There's more to the story than you just say, oh, well, I'm a woman or I'm a man, and all of a sudden life is rosy and beautiful. Because the reality is your biology doesn't line up with your mindset. And even after transition surgeries have been done, we've seen that these depressive issues don't go away. They just continue. It's so frustrating because it's so clearly that the ideology is not supported by the studies, right? The ideology, right. All of that is not supported by it. And we're running this giant experiment. You know, this California law that says you can't counsel someone or point them to or try to help them to transition back to the gender of their biology. But then again, they're going to tell us the classification is gender fluid. Right. So that a person is like, well, I feel like a man sometimes, I feel like a woman sometimes. So for you to say, well, maybe you're a man and this is something you need to explore about, you know, your masculinity, or maybe you're actually a woman, you couldn't do that.
Well, and this is the issue. You look at psychology. How has psychology looked at this for years? It is called gender dysphoria. They're having a difficult time understanding. This is what is consistent. If a young child suddenly thinks that she is a 60-year-old woman with a cane and who can't walk, you're going to work with your child, with a psychologist, to help them understand, actually, you're a little girl, you're 9 years old, and your legs work just fine, honey.
Well, this Kaiser study was children as young as three. So a three-year-old says, I'm a little girl, mommy, if it's a little boy, and now you have to say, oh, you're a little girl. And if anybody in the family tries to point or counsel or give them a book that says, you know, you're a boy and how to be a boy, that is a criminal offense.
It's ridiculous.
Does that make any sense? Like, it's ridiculous. Yeah.
My friend's 5-year-old ran around in a tutu and liked to put fairy wings on. Was he worried that his little boy was a girl? No, it was just a phase.
You know, our 2-year-old had a Minnie Mouse skirt on yesterday, right? Walking around with it on and just little boy clothes, because his sister had one. So we called it his kilt, his mini kilt. but then this morning he's walking through the house with no pants on and his gym shorts pulled over his face saying he's Spider-Man. Do I now have to act like he's Spider-Man? Do I have to honor and acknowledge that? Cause he's wearing gym shorts over his face.
Yeah, I was going to say my little sister would be dressed up by my brother in his old Spider-Man costume and he'd call her Spider Baby. Is she suddenly like transgender and trans species or something? You know, like, it's just, you guys, this is insane. And I am begging you, go to my website, timmerie.com. That's TIMMERIE. And there are some really important steps that the California Family Research Council and many others are saying we need to be active in opposing this assembly bill that's currently trying to push so that you and I cannot assist people who are reaching out, asking for help, who are struggling through depression as they're facing gender dysphoria.
You know, I think a question a lot of people are asking as we approach this is, how do I deal with this? Mm-hmm. How do I deal with the person in my life who is transgendered, or I see at the store or on my kid's baseball team or whatever it is? How do I deal with that? And I think that's the part I don't want people to miss. We've talked about this issue a lot. And obviously as Catholics, we have to stand up firmly and say, there's something going on here that ain't right. There's an ideology that doesn't match up with the reality. But as far as the individual is concerned, your call to love and to be the love of God doesn't change at any point, right? If you encounter a transgender person, you're supposed to love that person where they are. Not to leave them there, but I mean, in that casual encounter, you see a person walking through the store is obviously a man dressed like a woman. You're not supposed to judge or to belittle or to oh, kids, look away. You know, you're supposed to treat that person with the dignity that you treat any other child, the living God. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think all of us have family members and friends who at some point have, you know, identified, you know, differently than what we see is consistent with their biology, with sexual attraction. What biology makes clear. But you don't reduce someone to their sexual attraction or to their sexual identity, right? Because we are not reduced just to sex. And I think that that is at the heart of this. When we are forcing this sex ed on kids, when we are forcing people to no longer receive counseling for a dysphoria, a psychologically, clinically proven dysphoria, we are saying you're just reduced to a bunch of sexual intercourse, sexual desire. And that is what we're limiting people to. And you guys, life is so much more than that. And where is the faithful counseling, the faithful love and the love of the Father that these people are not receiving?
Yeah, absolutely. Where, you know?
We have a new segment on trending that we are introducing, and that is the keep them or drop them segment. So a number of people have been writing in with just, you know, examples of what they're experiencing in a dating relationship and just looking for a little bit of advice. So Chris, I'm going to throw this out here. We had a young girl, her name's Emily, and she's 29, and she wrote in talking about how she is dating this person. She's been dating him for a couple months, and basically he ended up sharing that he had cheated on a previous girlfriend. Emily's sitting here going, man, you know, I don't know what to do. He said that he never told his ex he was unfaithful. No slip there. But basically, she's kind of concerned. While he's told her, she's not really sure how to handle this. And she's not sure if he's learned from his mistake. So the question is, should she keep him or should he drop him?
Wow. I can't say she should keep him or she should drop him. I think she should get to know him.
Yeah.
And right? That's the reality is, so I think she should date in a measured way that, you know, you're not investing, you're not falling in love in the first, second, third date. You're getting to know the person and you're developing trust with that person.
Yeah. And since he's opened up in the conversation, maybe you already said this, but if you haven't, you should probably make it pretty clear. Thanks for being honest with me. I just want you to know that cheating's never acceptable to me. And I would hope that you would be honest. If that's something that you're tempted to still, is that an issue you deal with, being faithful?
Right. And again, what's the context of that previous relationship? Are we talking 2 15-year-old kids who, you know, held hands at lunch and then he met another girl and held her hand? What, you know, what was the context of that? Or was it someone who he was engaged to and then he, you know, had a relationship with another person in that context? It's a much bigger difference.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? You know,
so I think we're both saying keep him, but you need to get a little more information. So we're not saying marry him, but figure out the context, right? Figure out whether or not you trust him and then make a decision of whether this is someone you could discern marriage. Because I mean, you're 29, you must be looking to settle down, I imagine.
Yeah, I would imagine you are. Yeah. And the fact that he's at a point where he's sharing that, why is he sharing that? I mean, he wants to build trust. He wants to let you know of his faults and failings, and he wants to show you the whole picture, right? This is where I was, but this is where I am now. And I think that's something very honorable, just making sure that is where you were, not where you are.
Absolutely. So this past week, we celebrated Good Shepherd Sunday. Some of you in the church pews may have heard a fantastic homily on discernment, vocation, the priesthood, religious life. But one piece of information, Chris, that came out this past week that I was reading in that is that basically those priests who are soon to be priests that are about to be ordained this year, 86% of those men basically came out saying that someone, whether it was a parish priest, a friend, another parishioner, one of them really, really encouraged them to join the priesthood. And I thought that that was a staggering statistic. 86% were encouraged in some way by someone in their immediate lives.
Well, it makes sense, right? I mean, it's such a... Okay, so vocation of the religious life in our context is such a weird alien thing, right? Mm-hmm. It's just abnormal in modern American culture to think, I'm going to choose a celibate life and a life of service, and the culture goes, bruh. And so I think if you don't have people going, no, that's valid, that's something beautiful, that's something we can support, that's something we can see you being heroic in, yeah, it's a very hard thing to stand against all of the cultural tide and say, yeah, this is something I want, or even that you would even consider it.
Absolutely. Well, and to see, you know, it's not just that 86% of them said that someone encouraged them, but they had at least 4 people give that piece of encouragement. And I think that it's been interesting, you know, I think in both of our work, sometimes, you know, you come across someone and they're talking about, you know, their discerning and their vocation, but sometimes people only talk about their vocation to marriage. And I've seen a number of 17-year-olds who are already obsessed with their vocation to marriage and always throw it out there. Hey, are you dating anyone? No. Well, have you considered, or have you been open to religious life or becoming a priest ever? And a lot of the time the answer is, I've never even thought of that as an option.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I've seen the converse. I was just talking to a group of young men over the weekend who are high school students saying, how do you know if you're called to be a priest? You know, and how do I discern that? And really saying, you know, get together with other young men who are of a like mindset, talk to your parish priest, talk to family members. One of the young men had received advice from a priest who'd said, think about where you are 30 years from now. Not today, but 30 years from now, and think, is this the life that I think God wants me to be happy in? Mm-hmm. You know? I think, in our broad context, most of us never consider it. I think there's a lot of young people who are in the church who, when thought hits them, they have no idea where to go with it either.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's where that validation from people in their life makes a huge difference.
And I think that for those people who are more open to discerning, they're also faced with that. I'm giving up everything. That idea, I'm giving up not just having a wife, but having a family. And I remember a priest a number of years ago said this to me. I hit a point where I realized, yeah, I could have a family. I could have, you know, children. I could have a great life, but I can also become a priest and I'm free to choose either direction. And it was a point really of liberation for him of I could do either. Doesn't mean that I would be a horrible father if I was supposed to be a priest, but you know, I just have to look at this. I could do either. It's just, what is my path of sanctification? How can I bring as many people as possible with me by the good man that I am in whatever vocation I choose?
It definitely is not something you walk alone in.
Absolutely not. You're listening to Trending. That is Chris Mueller. I'm Timmy Millington. Chris, how can people get a hold of you if they want to check out some of the projects you're working on?
Yeah, you can just go to chrismueller.co. That's chrismueller.co. Or you can always find me at cmuellertweets on Twitter.
And we're always posting tons of articles of what we're talking about on the show, what we're musing about throughout the week, reacting to everything that's taking place in the news. You can tweet me at TimmerIe. You're listening to Trending. I'm Timmy Millington here with Chris Mueller. You know, Chris, it's been interesting. I've seen a lot about New York over the past couple weeks and Chick-fil-A. One man wrote this piece in the New Yorker as he's sitting on the rooftop of the largest Chick-fil-A, and he's not too happy that they're there.
Yeah, okay, so this is just outright prejudice. I can't call it any other way. He's unhappy because it's a Christian company who gives the day off to their employees and has Christian values, and he feels like they don't belong in New York. We don't need that here in our lovely, beautiful New York. It's just outright prejudice. I don't think you can call it any other way.
You know, it's interesting because I think that a lot of people love Chick-fil-A. The food's great. And I don't think that very many people are going, I'm not going to Chick-fil-A because they're a Christian company. Yet for some reason, the mainstream media has been saying New York doesn't want Chick-fil-A when Chick-fil-A has been incredibly successful. They've opened their largest business yet. And, you know, part of their value system is a Judeo-Christian value system.
Well, absolutely. I fly through the Atlanta airport on not an irregular basis. And every time I've been there with a group of people, it is a pilgrimage. We have to go hit the Chick-fil-A that's in the Atlanta airport. I mean, Chick-fil-A is delicious. It's a little pricey, but it's delicious.
Why right? The Atlantic airport?
Well, Atlanta, because Chick-fil-A is based in Atlanta.
Okay.
So there is absolutely one there. And so a lot of people who are coming from like the Northeast or they don't have Chick-fil-A's yet, that is like their chance is flying through Atlanta. They can grab some Chick-fil-A.
Well, and are people as offended by In-N-Out? I mean, In-N-Out does post scripture passages, right?
Oh, it's on the bottom of the cup. You got to look for it. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It might be on the bottom of the cup, but still.
Yeah,
you
but
know,
they're open on Sunday.
You know what's so funny? That's what I was thinking. I think the most offensive thing that Chick-fil-A does for your average person is they close on Sunday.
Right. Which again, like, shouldn't we be like proclaiming like that's a beautiful thing? Like they care enough about their employees that they say you need a day off. They don't say you have to go to church, but if you want to, you can, right? You need a day off. You need a rest. Didn't unions fight for the right to a day off for workers? Like, wasn't that something that we've done? And now Chick-fil-A has made it part of their ethos. And oh my gosh, they're forcing their Christian values on us. They're terrible.
Well, and remember, even 10 years ago, more stores used to be closed on Sunday, I mean, especially on holidays, right? You would never find a store open. I remember one year we needed like a pair of shoes for one of my younger siblings on Easter. And we were just trying to find anywhere to get a pair of shoes to match your outfit for Easter. We had a big family reunion and nowhere was open. And while we were frustrated, for sure, we were also glad, you know, one, it's Sunday, and two, it's Easter. Nowhere should be open today. But now, you know, 10 years later, everywhere is open on Sunday. It's no big deal. In fact, they have pretty prolonged hours and they're glad to promote that now.
Yeah, I think a lot of this is related to the big hubbub we had, you know, X number of years ago about the marriage initiative, right? The gay marriage initiative. And Chick-fil-A was involved in the defense of traditional marriage, and it became a huge deal. And then the founder got together with, you know, people from the gay marriage crowd. And they really had some reconciliation person to person, right? And I remember the guy, I can't remember the name of the person on the other side, coming out and saying, like, this is a genuinely good, loving man. We don't see eye to eye, but he's been made a villain and he's not, right? But I think there's just this lingering, oh, they got to pay. They got to pay, and we're going to make them pay, because how dare they say that traditional marriage is a thing and needs to be defended? I really think that's what this is.
Well, and it's so interesting because people will complain, well, Chick-fil-A supports organizations that are essentially pro-marriage, which, you know, people who disagree with that call it other things. But these organizations that they support, that's their right to support them as a business. And for example, just like you and I, if we don't want to shop at Starbucks because we don't like some of the organizations they support, we don't have to, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And so free speech is what we're founded on. But more and more, we're moving away from that. I think that there's this sense that people who haven't studied our Constitution, haven't studied our founding, don't know why that's important. Say, how dare you say something that offends me? You need to be silenced because you shouldn't be allowed to offend me. You shouldn't have ideas that are that say that my ideas are bad because I have a right to free speech, right? And so we negate the other person's right to free speech because we think we have a right not to be offended. And it's just totally contrary to everything that is the idea of the United States, but it's the reality we're living in.
Well, I love coming back to the idea of Sundays too, right? This idea of Sunday rest. Poland actually right now is working on implementing where stores are shut on Sundays, and there are very few exceptions. And I think one of them had to do with gasoline, right? Being able to get some gas in your car, fuel your car up. So then they were saying that a bunch of grocery store chains were then going to become also a place to pick up some gas so that they could then justify being open. If they do, that's fine. And I'm not saying that we're for, you know, government requiring stores to be closed or opened. I think that that's where you kind of get to a point where there's an issue. But if a country and a people choose to be closed on Sundays, that is something that is directing us ultimately to some of those very first commandments that God gave us, that Sabbath day, keep holy the Sabbath day, and God fulfilled in sending Jesus the Sabbath. And we now have, right, the Sunday day of rest. And it's a moment where church comes first, right? Rest comes first. We can complete everything else in the week, in those 6 days. But on that seventh day, we take that moment to be with our Lord.
You know, you look at all of the stuff in our society, and I see it with teens that I work with. Anxiety disorder seems to be rising, depressive situations. And what we've taken out of our lives is any time to stop and process, any time to just rest and to relax and be done. And, you know, we've got our cell phones are constantly on. I was at Sam's Club not too long ago. Place was packed out on a Sunday. And I said, wow, super busy. Like, it's like this every Sunday. And because that's people, it's the one day you have less club sports, you have less work. And so you go out and you do all the work of your family that you didn't do because you're so busy doing the quote unquote leisure, which is actually just another job for your kids and for you, right? And we're sick. It's not working. Right, people look around, man. People don't seem happy. We're heavier. We're more medicated than ever before, and it's like we know it. But any attempt to say the system is broken, how dare you judge me? Right? Mm. Well, no, it's not working. You know it's not working. We all know it's not working. So why don't we go back and look at it and say, well, okay, God, who designed us in His image and likeness, said we need time to stop. Why don't we go back and say maybe there was a reason we need to honor that?
It's countercultural, but it's a basic need we are seeing. And what is Chris is saying here, that we need some element of rest.
Absolutely.
You know, some moment to pause, to step outside and smell the fresh air. You know, when we talk about how do we rest? Well, rest isn't just looking at the television. I like something you said a couple weeks ago, Chris. You're talking about your brain injury that you had last year when you got into the car accident.
Yeah.
And what did they tell you? I love what you said about that, about the darkness.
Just stop. Just you got to shut down stimuli. You got to let the brain heal.
And so part of what he was saying was you can't just be watching a TV show. You can't have these screens in front of you. You need to have some silence, some stopping moments, right? And some darkness at moments, right?
Yeah, right. Well, what they said is, you know, we tend to think, oh, I'm going to relax in front of the television. But what that your brain doesn't actually relax in front of the television because mm-hmm. it's processing that information. And what we now know is when you watch something, your body thinks it's experiencing that. And so the same kind of receptors fire off to a lesser degree than when you'd actually be in that physical activity. So if you're watching someone get beat up, you feel that to a lesser degree. And so, yeah, you're not resting. You're actually can be exhausted after watching mm-hmm. a show like that.
You're listening to Trending. That is Chris Mueller. I'm Timmarie Millington. Hey, give us a shout out on Twitter. We would love to hear anything that you're enjoying hearing discussed and even your perspective on what we're talking about. Also, I have a new co-host, Chris Mueller, and I would love for you to go and give him a review of he and I on the show and how you enjoy what we are talking about. You can go to iTunes podcast. Just look up Trending with Chris and Timmarie. You can also listen to the archive of all of these shows online, maybe where you are listening to the show currently. They only air one episode a week, so you can always find us online as well. If you look up Trending with Chris and Timmarie, you can find us at my website as well on speaker.com. You know, this past week, Chris, a new royal baby was born, and there are a couple of interesting things that came out about this. Princess Charlotte, who is actually a two-year-old big sister, made news not only for her sweet little waves outside of the hospital as she's walking into the hospital, but because she is the very first not to be bumped down the line of succession by her little brother.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Yeah, I guess just a couple years ago, a new law was passed there in the UK, making it so that females essentially can inherit the throne still, and that male heirs that come after them will not bump up in
get
that
in line
of succession.
Yeah.
So I thought that was pretty neat, especially given her mother, right? Or her grandmother, who's the queen. And just the entire situation, I think in a time when people are fighting so loudly for equality, here is a moment where you see, I think, a really good example of why can't a woman rule and be made able to rule even if there's a man around?
If we're going to have a completely arbitrary form of government, I think this is fantastic.
Arbitrary.
You know, like, well, you happen to be born first, so you're in charge now. I mean, you know, it is kind of a silly way to do things, really.
Right. Well, I mean, they are raised, right?
Oh, sure.
For that to be their duty. Not necessarily that we'd always agree with some of the things we're now seeing some of the royals wanting to promote, which is interesting because what's been good in many ways about the royal family is that they tend to stay out of social issues a lot of the time.
Well, they used to.
They used to. And
right.
Now, and I think that's something that Queen Elizabeth tried very hard to maintain in a period where social media, television came really full swing in when she was queen.
Right. Okay. So I wonder how much of this is not the legacy of Princess Diana, who was very involved in social issues. And these obviously are her children. But yeah, the royals are getting into it. I mean, and I think we've seen this a little bit hinted at, but now we look at this new generation, and I think it's Prince George, who's the one who's now saying that he and his new wife, their major thing is going to be LGBT and the rest of the initials issues. Like they want to, this is what they're doing. That's what they're making their business.
Prince Harry and Meghan Markle. We're actually talking about that on the
Who's
next
George?
Show.
Is George the baby?
George is the oldest of the babies, the royal babies.
I'm a Catholic and I'm not British. So there you go.
But you know, I think a lot of people are very captivated by the royal family. The fact that here's a royal family and you know, Kate, third baby. And I think that's awesome that they are having a larger family, even though that would be larger in that part of the world right now.
Well, when they announced that pregnancy, it came out and people were like, oh, three babies, how dare you?
Well, you're listening to Trending. Listen up for more. You can find us on Spreaker, on iTunes. We'd love to hear from you guys. Have an awesome week. That is Chris Mueller, and I'm Timmarie Millington.